look out to the horizon as far as you can see, as wide as you can see, and imagine what is this place going to be like for your great, great, great grandchildren.
This week on Humans of the Trail, I have Ali Pretty on the podcast. I first learned about Ali through friend of the podcast, Martin Howe, who was on episode 14 and who's also been involved in Ali's project, Beach of Dreams. Now, Beach of Dreams is a visual arts journey, community storytelling and digital art project inspired by the challenges faced by communities who live on our coastlines. I was really keen to learn more about Ali and her journey into creating Beach of Dreams. And I love this episode as a story of an individual inspired by nature, the outdoors and art, combining these passions to create something truly magical. If you enjoy the show, don't forget to rate and subscribe on Apple or Spotify. So without further ado, I introduce you to episode 38 of the Distance Hiker podcast with Ali Pretty. So yeah, feel free to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Ali Pretty and I'm the Artistic Director of Kinetica, which is an arts organisation based out in Essex. And for the last 10 years, we've been using walking as part of our practice to connect communities.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining me on the podcast, Ali. It's great to have you here. Now, I'm really curious about Kinetica. It's something that has crossed my path through mutual acquaintance of ours, Martin, who's been on the podcast before, who's now involved in it as well. Now, I want to go into the Beach of Dreams thing, but I'm going to do that in a minute. I would just love to know a bit more about Kinetica as an organization, and kind of what you do and where it came from. A bit of a backstory would be amazing.
Well, I'll try and keep it short, but I founded Kinetica 25 years ago. And it is an arts organisation and it's driven by the motivation to bring communities together, to empower people to have a voice and tell their stories using the arts as a tool for social change, really, is how I believe in it. I'm not trained as an artist at all. I was a graduate in politics and sociology at Bristol, where I became politicised, if you like. So I was quite active in the Green and Common and the peace movement back in the 80s. And I was really fired up by an early visit to South Africa during apartheid to think about how I could make a difference in the world, not really knowing. I mean, when we're 20, we might all think we can change the world. So I was looking for a way to do that. So actually my journey started in India in 1985 when I was working for a theatre director. And we brought together different people from different castes, different tribes, different ages, and different kind of class backgrounds, and we created a show without any text or words. And it was through that I made it. You know, we were making masks and we were doing acrobatics and, you know, creating this show. And what I realized was that this way of working had a power to connect across all possible barriers, because I felt very, very connected to the people I was working with, even though I shared no common dialogue, if you like. And as part of that, you know, it was a month-long residency. The theatre director, Habib Tanvir, said to me, "Ali, if you want to change the world, you need to be an artist." I said, "Oh, okay, I'm not an artist." And he said, "And if you want to know anything about culture and politics, you need to come with me to Calcutta." So we went on this big journey to Calcutta. And at the end of that trip, I was 22. You know, I was really committed to finding out, you know, about this thing, which was participatory arts and whether it was an effective means to bring people together. And I found out that it was. And really, I've been driven, that was in 85, to do that for the rest of my life. And I've found I was freelancing in Hackney, in community arts in Hackney, doing quite a bit of carnival for Notting Hill Carnival. So during the 80s and 90s, I was particularly interested in bringing different people from different cultural backgrounds together, and carnival being a fantastic way of doing that, particularly influenced by carnival in Trinidad, the influence of Africa and India on the art form. I travelled a lot to India and Trinidad, and sort of formed my way of working by working with great directors and designers and other artists. And it was after a number of years, I thought if I founded my own company and became a director of my company, then I could create and direct and produce my own projects. So in the 90s we did, and the 2000s, 90s and the noughties, we were doing a lot of carnival in London, working with lots of different young people and big national touring projects, some international productions in India and some commercial productions, working on Olympics in Atlanta and FIFA in Abu Dhabi, and then 2012 in London. And then at some point I thought, actually, I kind of want a bit of a change of direction. And I wasn't sure what it was. So I started walking with the Long Distance Walkers Association. And I got really into the walking, and the further the distance, I got into long distance walking, and realized that did something to my imagination. And also I met lots of people that I wouldn't normally meet in the arts. And so we moved out to Essex in 2014 because we had a massive big studio. And the medium, my artistic practice, is through silk painting. So I was designing carnival bands by making silk costumes. And then I wondered what I could do if I was walking. So we've been developing this walking model, which is walking, talking and making, where we collect community stories. We get them to draw their stories on different themes and around different questions, and then translate those stories into really, you know, different sizes and shapes of big silk flags, and then walk to the places where the stories came from and share them.
I wasn't aware of the walking, talking and making aspect and the sort of storytelling behind that. So could you just go into that in a little bit more detail and sort of what you've learned and can develop from that particular practice and what that looks like in practice as well?
Yeah, so as I said, I started walking just as me, and I wanted to walk some things out and think about what was the next stage of my life. And that was in 2010. And I knew that I didn't want to. I'd done dinner 20 years in Notting Hill Carnival, and I wanted to do something different. And when I started walking, I just thought, oh, this makes me feel really good, and it makes me access people. And they talk a lot, you know, people talk to you when you're walking in a way that they don't, you know, you open up. And so I thought, oh, so I suppose the model came about. Actually, the first walking project I did was called Walking Wiltshire's White Horses in 2012. In 2013, and initially it was I was invited to create a curated walk around the White Horses of Wiltshire, you know, sharing histories, and it was during that time that I thought, well, what can I do to bring some of me and my practice into that? So I thought, well, the silk is the thing that I do. It's a batik process, so maybe if I work with each of the communities around one of those white horses and get them to create a response to the landscape through a visual means, and then we can have these, they were big 4-meter flags, and then we can walk with those flags horse to horse. So the first horse we had, this is to chalk horses, we'd have one flag, and on one day, the second day, we'd add another flag. And so by the time we got back to devices, we'd had 8 flags. And that model worked really well, so I thought, oh, I can try this again. And it was really coincidental that or serendipity that when we moved our studio to Thurrock, it's in Purfleet on Thames, our studio, the only reason we particularly moved was because it had a massive big studio and we could make a lot of silk in it, and it overlooked the Thames. But when we got there, they were like, well, there's this community that we'd really like you to engage with, this historic council, and they were like, we're really into culture-led regeneration. And then somebody heard that I'd just done this walk, and so they sent the public health department to see me. And I was actually asked by the public health department to start a walking festival in Thurrock. And I was like, why are they getting walk in Thurrock? It looks to me like it's the A13, the M25, and it doesn't look like one of these places. It's not kind of like Wiltshire's White Horses. So I was like, I said, I want to walk 100 miles in Thurrock. Is that possible? And they went, oh, yes, madam. There's 162 miles of public footpath. So I was like, great, well, we'll walk 100 of them. We'll do 10 miles a day for 10 days. But you guys are going to have to show me where to walk, because I have no idea. I mean, I literally have just landed from Thurrock. It's only 15 miles from my house in Hackney, but it's completely new to me. So you will have to map the walks. So the thing is, I need to do 10 miles every day and we need to join them up. So why don't we, can you tell me where we should go on the walks? You know, what are the highlights of Thurrock? And then We got that, and then I found somebody, as I do in most communities, you'll know from the walking community, you find somebody who loves them, like Martin, who loves to map a route.
Yeah.
I found Peter who mapped a route, and then we did that, and I think there were a couple of things. And so obviously then the local people had decided where they should show a visitor, which was me, but obviously we had a wider audience. And then they became proud of, and they realised all the things they had that they didn't realise they had. But not only that, they walked out of their, you know, postcode zone. If we were in London, it would be a postcode zone. So they walked out of Grays to Tilbury. And so they discovered things about their neighbours in Thurrock and what Thurrock had to offer that they'd never experienced before. So we thought at the end of that year, we were like, oh, wow. So, you know, there's a lot more stories. And the biggest thing was that I never knew there was so much in Thurrock. So the next year in 2016, we did a call out for 100 stories, and it was called T100 Stories. And so we collected 100 stories and made 100 smaller flags, and we walked with the flags to all 100 places over 10 days. And then the person who wrote the story would tell the story. And so it's become an annual festival. Every year we have a different theme. So this year coming up, 23, it's T100 Sounds. So we're recording sounds of the river, and we're inviting local bands and musicians to walk and compose songs with us. So it's really evolved, and that's how the other projects like Beat Your Dreams have come out of that practice. So it's kind of been something, it's been a journey that builds every kind of year to the next stage.
I just want to go back to the stories. So you collect these stories in addition to making the silk flags as well. How are these stories then told? Is it through performance, or is it in some other way? Are they written kind of, are we talking about stories as in somebody's actual kind of a story which somebody has kind of verbally or written, presented in, you know, words or writing?
So with the first iteration, the T100 stories, we worked with 20 schools and a whole myriad of different community groups that might be older heritage groups or sewing groups or, you know, different kind of groups that knew. So we would put older people with the kids, and quite often they would tell the what we call the true story. And then the writer that we worked with, Laura, she then got them to talk about more about how did they feel about a place. So you've got Coalhouse Fort that was a defence in the Second World War, but to the kids it was a place that had the most ghosts, and they could remember all the stories that they had as kids, like hiding and being frightened there. And, you know, we had a fantastic one about Lakeside Shopping Centre, and they invented this ghost of the lady of IKEA. So they wrote lots of things, and then Laura edited it to a small piece, and we had a small book. So it was a small A6 book, which is on our website anyway. So that a book that you could put in your walking trousers, and then you could read it when you got to the place. So there was the picture of the flag that we scanned as the illustration of the story. Then there was the true fact. We had Jonathan Catton, who's a historian, who said true fact. And then we had the story, which was a response to the place, and the true fact, which was nothing like the true fact. So we're quite honest that they were stories. And they were also mapped on the website. So you could, you could go and click on a map in Thurrock where it was, and then the story would pop up. And with that, we had some video and audio as well in that digital space. And then the next year in 2017, there was a performing arts group, and they took five of those stories and developed them into outdoor street theatre.
Muting myself. Interesting. So in terms of the Beat Your Dreams project, then I can see where the clear kind of path of this develops into Beat Your Dreams. But give us a bit of background of that, because it's very long distance orientated as well. In particular, you know, coastal walking is a big theme at the moment. So that's, for me, is why I noticed it through Martin and I'm talking to you today. That happened back in 2021, though. So it was a little while ago. It's a few years ago now. Go into the history of that and kind of what it is exactly.
So as part of this development of these walking, talking and making model in 2017, which seems a long time ago and it's pre-COVID, there was it was a UK year of the relationship between India and Britain. So it was UK year of Indian culture in Britain. And it's because it was 70 years of independence. And there was an initiative from the British Council and the Arts Council to call out for proposals to reimagine India. And I, as I've mentioned earlier, my journey started in India and in Kolkata. So, you know, everybody was looking and going, well, this has got your name on it, Ali. And I thought, yes, it has. And so the brief was really, you know, what it said on the tin was reimagine that relationship. And there being on perfectly on Thames by the River Thames, I was thinking, you know, where does this then connect to India? And I was like, well, obviously it's Kolkata. So the relationship between Kolkata and London was obviously the formation of the East India Trading Company. And I was thinking, well, the role that the river had in both cities was really crucial because it was obviously why the trading happened. And also all the communities that are not in the main city, they service the main city. So when we think of the Thames Estuary, a friend of mine said, you know, you could consider it as the backstage of London. So it's kind of where the taxi drivers are and the construction workers and the oil and, you know, all the different industry that goes to make a city comes from all those communities on the river that go to fuel that city. And I thought, well, if we looked at that and we took that principle and looked at the River Hooghly, in which leads into Kolkata, then you might have a parallel. So we took 10 communities from the River Thames and twinned them with 10 communities along the River Hooghly. And we created these walks. Mm. And I wanted to involve a writer because I suppose when I started the model, even back in 2012, what I was really interested in was that how you could have an actual physical consecutive day walk, but you could have a conversation that builds both on the ground, but online, so that, you know, when any of these projects happen, I'm normally the only person or one or two other people that walks the whole time. So I kind of think, well, I'm the holder of the narrative. And so I will know what happened yesterday and I'll bring what happened yesterday into today and tomorrow. And actually what I wanted was a writer to work with me on kind of capturing that narrative and putting it out online. And it's something I'd wanted to do for ages. So I thought, well, this one with India, I think it'd be really interesting to have a writer write a daily blog. And way back when, I'd been to a Guardian masterclass and met Kevin Rushby, the travel journalist, and I had sort of talked to him about walking, and he seemed to be quite interested. So I managed to find his like Hotmail address. I said, Kevin, do you remember me? I'm the White Horses woman. He's like, I remember you. How could I forget? And so we met in King's Cross, and I said, do you want to come to India? Of course, he loves India. And I told him that narrative and he's like, how could I not do this, Annie? And was surprised when I got the funding. So he was writing a daily blog. And when we walked from Tilbury to East Tilbury, there's a part of the Thames Estuary where there's a kind of glass beach and the sun was setting in September. So it's quite a low winter sun. And it hit this beach. And Kevin was like, what is that? It's extraordinary, you know, this glistening beach. So he went up to it and was like, oh, okay. So it's full of broken glass and it's broken glass of bottles and you get flutes of champagne bottles and things like that. And it's because it was a dumping ground after the Blitz in 1945 for, you know, London's domestic rubble. And when the tide goes in and out, every tide, it washes up all this kind of stuff. And so in his blog, he went, what dreams were shattered when the bomb went off? This is the beach of broken dreams. And there he gave me my line for my next project. So I'm going, if this is the beach of broken dreams, where is the beach of dreams? You better go and find it. And my vision was that, you know, there's all these glistening gems on the foreshore. And at that time I was thinking, you know, they're everywhere. These metaphorically glistening gems with really great people, great communities, great things happening. And yet we feel very fragmented as a society, and maybe we're just not looking at the bits that work. And what would happen if you walked around the coastline and you picked up these glistening gems and you connected them together and you put together a different view and a different picture for the future? So that was the narrative that drove the original concept of Beach of Dreams. And now, obviously, this is pre-COVID. I mean, I had this idea in 2017, which was pre-COVID and very much post-Brexit or post the vote. And in that Essex coast, particularly, it was a very strong vote leave. So it was a very pertinent moment where there was a lot of fraction and fractured communities. And initially it was a response to, you know, bringing people together in response to the Brexit vote. But obviously, since then, we've had COVID, and also the climate emergency has kind of become much more in our minds. So it evolved between 2017 and 21 into a different kind of project, was really about what are we going to do to change our behaviour for a sustainable future, and in particular, you know, what do we need to do on the coastline of Britain. And so in 2021, that was the walk.
I'm interrupting this episode to talk to you about Highlander, not the 1986 film, but Highlander Adventure, who organised spectacular, curated multi-day hikes in some of the most beautiful hand-picked locations across the globe. In June 23, Highlander are arranging their first Lake District event, giving hikers an opportunity to enjoy a rewarding multi-day trek through the national park. With 96 and 52 kilometre routes available, there's options for all abilities, complete with food, a great sense of community, checkpoints and dedicated overnight camping spots, and a programme of evening activities. The 96k route starts on Wednesday the 5th of July, and the 52k route starts on Friday the 7th of July, with both routes wrapping up on Sunday the 9th of July. Highlander's events are fantastic for both beginners and experienced alike, but if you've been listening to the podcast for a while and you're eager to dive into your first multi-day walk, yet you're unsure where to begin and which trail to walk, then the Highlander Lake District event may be for you. Highlander really work hard to offer something totally unique and special for the hiking community, and their passion shines through, which is why I am delighted to be attending the event in July, and I'll be taking a roaming podcast studio with me. You can join me and may even be included within the podcast by signing up today using the discount code LAKES20 to enjoy 20% off. You can find out more by visiting highlanderadventure.com and searching for the Lake District Adventure under the Europe tab on the website. So that's highlanderadventure.com. Now back to the podcast. So what practically then, what did it look like on the ground? What did the walk look like? And also what had to go in behind the scenes to make it happen? Because if you go onto the website, you see people walking along the beach holding these beautiful flags. Can you expand on how that actually worked? Did people walk the whole 500 miles? Did people walk bits of it? It's kind of how does that piece together?
So there we are in lockdown 2021, January 2021. We're in lockdown for year two, and everybody's really getting a bit, fed up with lockdown and very depressed, and lots of people have lost people and lives have changed. And so, and I was challenged because, A, we didn't get the kind of amount of funding that we had hoped to get. So I was like, we can't do it on the scale. And now we're not even allowed out. So, I was thinking, I knew that I was going to walk 500 miles and I wanted to engage 500 people. And I knew that I wanted to make 500 silks. And I also wanted to get 500 pieces of writing. And pre-COVID, we would have gone to all of those places, you know, driven to all those places, been in residence, done workshops in schools, and, you know, our old way of working was like that. It's like, well, now I can't even see anybody, you know, how are we going to do this? So then I thought, well, maybe we could get each person to sign up for a mile, because at least what they can do is they can walk down to their coast where they live, and then they can look at that mile and study that mile. And so it's like, yes, that's it. And I think it was a particular moment and a particular time that made it such a success, because people were at home and they were fed up, you know, and this gave them something. So we created this resource pack, online resource pack, and launched it. And we got Peter Elman from Long Distance Walking Association to map 500 miles and make a GPX point for each mile. And then we did an Eventbrite for each mile. So if you signed up, it's basically an Eventbrite for one. And so we then did the launch and say, sign up for your mile. When you signed up for your mile, you then got the resource pack, and then you got the instructions to go for a walk to your mile, choose the favourite spot in your favourite mile, look at what's beneath your feet on that favourite spot, and describe it in detail, and then tell me what connects you to this mile. You know, looking backwards, is it a family connection, or is it the history, or is it something about the earth? You know, but what is it in great detail? And then look out to the horizon as far as you can see, as wide as you can see, and imagine what is this place going to be like for your great, great, great grandchildren, and write about that. And so people wrote and they sent us pictures, and then, you know, we were in the studio because we were allowed to be working in the studio because you couldn't make 500 planks at home. And, you know, we had 10 artists, and for, you know, months, we were just, a couple of months, we literally were receiving these drawings. Oh, we've got to turn this into a design. And so we'd turn these textural patterns into designs with the wax. And then we're using natural dyes, which was also the first time we'd ever used natural dyes. We created the 500 pennants, numbered them by their miles, bagged them up into, you know, there's 35 days of walking, 35 bags in the back of the camper van. And off I went with Kevin again, who said that he wanted to do another walk with me. Don't know if he'll do the next one, but anyway. And so we set off. And so on day one, I met Jane, who was at Lowestoft, and said, "Jane, here's your flag, your mile number one. Tell me about your mile." And then she leads her mile. So it was a way of getting each person to be the leader and the author of their own mile. And it kind of did what I'd been hoping to do for the last 10 years, which was it meant that because they were inputting their writing and their thoughts, then that influenced the conversation with the other people that were walking. And so the conversation would build from the input from each mile, and each mile it was another person. So, and then Kevin wrote a daily blog for that, but we also recorded quite a lot of audio files. We have a story map that was an Esri story map. And so we uploaded the content. So every mile has also got the content online. So me and Kevin and John Offord, BBC radio producer, walked all 500 miles consecutively. And then the people that signed up would walk their mile, or they'd walk half a day. And we got back to Thurrock 35 days later.
That's fascinating. I have to ask then, as somebody who enjoys a story, what kind of stories did you get around how people connect to the ground that they're walking on? But also, what kind of stories did you get in terms of the dreams that they have for the future of the place that they're in? Were there any that you could remember or stood out in particular?
Overarchingly, it was about how important it was for people to have been able to connect to the landscape and to be able to walk. I mean, we walked out of lockdown when we started on the 28th of June. We were still in, you know, whatever it was, outdoor restrictions. And by the time 35 days later, literally the restrictions were opening. So this was the first time that people had come together for nearly 2 years. So a lot of the writing was about, you know, some people said, "Oh, I couldn't get the mile I wanted to get." So I think it was in Hadley Castle. We got somebody who said, "I've never walked there before, but that was the only mile available to me." So she said, "Now I know every tree, every bird, and, you know, I've really studied it and I've come to really love and care about this particular mile." And that was a new mile for her. You know, there were others. There was one particular woman. I'd asked people to think about for their great great grandchildren, and she was like, I don't have any children, so I'm not going to have any great grandchildren. And my husband died during COVID, and she read something that was so poignant, him being there in the stars and the cosmos, and this tree, particular tree, reminding her of him, you know. And everybody was on that walk when she read it, and she read it so beautifully, just cried, you know. And then there were other people. Where were we? Shotley. People would talk about the birds. A lot of people talk about the birds and the bird song, you know, the importance, and hoping that they would still be there. Around Walton on the Naze, there's big coastal erosion. And there were stories about, because if you go along that coastline, the whole beach is full of brick and old pipes, terracotta pipes, and it's like houses that have fallen in. And so it was like the fear of more of that falling in. Jaywick, there was lots of memories of people who'd spent holidays in Jaywick with their grandparents. So they were thinking about memories gone past, and hoping, I suppose, that their grandchildren would still have those memories. There's a lot of family stories. So those are some of those stories. And actually, even in Purfleet, some of the stories were, although Kevin's blogs weren't so, I mean, Thurrock's a hard place, and it really brought it home to us how much work there was still to do, or we hadn't even started. But there were some people, you know, who had come out of London and had been escaping situations in London, who found, you know, walking along the Thames, along Rain and Marshes and Purfleet, you get the sunsets, and that, how that was a space of peace for them. And they hoped that that wouldn't get overdeveloped and it wouldn't take the sense of community away. So there were very different, but, you know, we were with Kevin, we were discussing it quite a lot. And he says, I think if you took the stories as a collection, it would capture a moment in time in a kind of COVID history.
And these stories are now available, as you say, on your website, on the Kineska website.
We click through to the story map, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Cool. I'll have to keep a link of this then in show notes if people want to read those. I wasn't aware they were available, so that's great. So
Also, I mean, I think a really great way of accessing the project is there's two films on the Beach of Dreams page. One is a 30-minute documentary. So one of the really effective things that we, with the sharing and collecting stories, as well as obviously having them on the story map, which is mile by mile, the story of the project is through a documentary that was made by Rosa Productions using the narrative from Kevin's blogs. So he became the curator of the story. And I think that that there, you get the sense of the journey and you get the sense of different people's voices. And the model of the project. And then in addition, there's another film by Fotis Beklis, who took the audio of the that John had recorded of the people reading their own stories in the landscape that they were written in, and he's used that as the audio for the film. So you get the real sense of those voices in the landscape from that film.
Fantastic. I have not actually watched the film, so I wasn't aware they were available online. So I'll have a look at those, because I'm aware that they were they released at the World Trails or the Trails Film Festival? Was that the first place they were available?
We did a public screening at the National Gallery in January 2022, which was online and on Zoom.
Okay.
A few hundred people. So that's when we first released the documentary. And then the premiere screening of Fotis's film was at the World Trails Conference in Skiathos in September.
Brilliant. That sounds really interesting. I had Julian on the podcast a little while back, who spoke about the conference anyway. So he filled me in on the details. And I saw that online, and when it was going on, I thought, there's a conference about trails? This is incredible. I need to talk to Julian and get him on. So yeah, I got the impression from everybody who attended, I know a few people who attended, that it was really, really good. This is evolving. Not to be missed. I'm expecting my invite through the post for 2024 when it's happening again. Is it 24? So this has developed. Yeah, cool. This has developed yet again into a bigger project for 2025, isn't it? So teaming up with Creative Lives to essentially, if I'm correct, walk around the entire coastline in a similar fashion. Can you expand on kind of the bigger vision for this enormity of a project that you're going to undertake, if the first film wasn't big enough in itself, and kind of where it's going to go from here?
Well, the connecting narrative, which I feel I need to tell you, is about stories. So when we did get back to Thurrock on day 35 or whatever, I literally sat down and cried. And because I was sitting there watching the A13 being expanded, you know, the ports and the housing estates and, you know, kids kicking around with no shoes on and food banks. And I was like, this isn't the Beach of Dreams. We're nowhere. We're back at the Beach of Broken Dreams, and we're nowhere near. And there's such a big job to be done. And I've got these 500 people's wishes and dreams in these flags. I need to take them to COP. So the next stage was to take them up to Scotland. And I walked from Edinburgh to Glasgow with a committed group of artists and activists and pilgrims. And we carried those flags into George's Square in Glasgow. And the conversation that we had on the way, I was with a lot of climate activists and environmentalists who were less familiar with walking with artists. And they were of the opinion that the way to get people connected to the issues of which we're going to face in the near future, or we're already facing now, and to really feel connected to the landscape is through a project like Beach of Dreams. Because when you, as you know, when you walk that coastline, you feel really connected to it. And something about walking with those flags and those dreams and connecting with other people and having those conversations on the way, you know, you really feel differently having done that, and probably therefore much more likely to care about the future and to think about how we can collectively make a change. So really, I was really like, okay, so we need to go national. I mean, there's no, you know, we've got to do something. And it was at the COP was a moment where it was like, yeah, we have to do something. And time's not waiting for us to get on with it. So I went back. I had met Robin from Creative Lives, who's like, well, very interesting, Ali, to meet Kinetica, and obviously doing great work. And then I was going, no, this is it. It's Beach of Dreams. And I got my mileage, which is how come Martin came on. I got it slightly wrong. So at the end of the film screening, I was like, it's 18,000 miles. What we do is we divide, which is now going to be 10,000 miles. What we do is we divide the coastline into roughly 250 mile sections. And that should be easy to do in a month, because we did 500 in a month. So 250 is slowing it right down so we can have more of a conversation. And then there's currently 47 250-mile sections. And what will happen is that all those sections will be walked at the same time. So it'll be May the 1st, 25 to May, June the 1st, 2025, which is 32 days. And 25, 6 of those days will be walking days, which is, you know, 10-ish miles a day. And then there'll be some days which are beach days, where there'll be a sort of a festival, or what we might call a rest day. And so the whole idea is that then it's all being walked simultaneously. Again, same principle. People or a group will sign up to a mile, and they will have a pennant. So we're talking 10,000 pennants, 10,000 stories, 10,000 digital spots, you know, for the stories. Probably 10 to 100,000 people walking during that month. And what the idea is really that it's an actual moment, you know, that a moment where this conversation comes into the forefront. And through the digital, or the connection through the digital space, it will, you know, you might be really, really focused on your mile and what you're going to do about your mile, but you know that you're one of 100,000 people walking, you know, in that month, and that you can go, okay, I'm really concerned about coastal erosion. Where are all the other coastal erosion stories? And I can connect with those people. And the idea this time is not just to imagine the future, it's to commit to something. So it's, tell me about your mile. What is it now? What are you going to commit to do to addressing these issues? And so it's about activating people around making a change in their lives, which is, you know, more than just, you know, litter picking. It's got to be more about we all need to live in a different kind of way to go into a sustainable future.
That's really, really interesting to me, actually, because I had a question as to how do you engage local people within these communities who are not inclined to walk? So people who may not come across this project because through the relation of walking, how do you engage somebody who might be, you know, hand to mouth through a food bank to get involved in this? But I guess you're not targeting particularly that kind of person. You're targeting somebody who can potentially be activated to go and dive deeper into their own community to try and make this change. But through connecting to other communities with similar problems, can almost lean on those communities to learn from them as well. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that would be one aspect of it. And I think last time it was, because it was COVID and it was the first time we did that model, it was more an individual signs up to a mile, but now it might be, well, the food bank signs up to a mile, and, you know, you collectively, all the people who run the food or use a food bank would be a group. And if that's near a coastline, then they might do that, and that would be interesting, and we would be able to locate who all the other, you know, what food security, you know, what's the issue around food security. So, and also it is only a mile, and, you know, people say, well, what happens if you can't walk? Well, either that we're putting in place that there are these beach days, so it might be actually you just turn up at the coast, you know, on one of these beach days, or there are going to, we're going to mark where the more accessible walking routes are, you know, and so the, in that in Essex, there's loads of people who could do it in mobility scooters or, well, you know, because there's loads of promenades. Or we've talked about, you know, grandparents, you know, allocating their mile to their grandchildren and saying, well, please, will you walk my mile for me? So you can find someone, you can buddy somebody who can't walk. And that's, for me, the whole power of the digital, because, you know, you can do, that's what I initially said, you know, I wanted to walk on foot, but to have an online conversation as well. And this will be the kind of, you know, the metaverse of the, that model, if you like. And that's also where we potentially can echo that around the world. So we've got Julian involved in Beach of Dreams. Julian's the vice chair of the World Trails Network board. I'm on the World Trails Network board. We pitched it in Greece, which is where I met Julian. There were 38 countries in that conference, and there'll be more in 24. So, you know, I'm fully expecting to have an international echo. I mean, it is ambitious, but, you know, if we're going to change, make this change, it could be the right project at the right time and spot. I think it's relatively simple to get involved, I think.
So other countries are going to be looking at doing a similar thing at the same time, potentially?
So there's various different levels. I mean, I think we've got, you can walk the whole 250 miles, which we're calling the, you know, the challenge walkers, like be what I did, and, you know, so 47 times me and Kevin Rushby. Then there will be people who, you know, as we walk through, will join us for half a day. They'll do their penance. There'll be artists that might respond. But there'll also be people that might be, like the international partners might be inspired. So, you know, they may take a stretch of the Chilean coastline and go, well, in May, we're going to do our walk. And we can actually then sort of walk at the same time and have the same and curate our own conversation. As long as the digital space can hold all of that or connect people, then we should do that. And of course, it's Martin who's getting his head around that digital space, because he attended the film screening in January, and he was the one that said, excuse me, I'd never met him before. Excuse me, Ali Pretty, it's not 18,000 miles around the coast. I think you'll find you've got that wrong. I think you'll find that you can't walk around the whole of the coast of the UK. I think we'll have a few challenges. I said, great. Well, you obviously know the coastline really well. Why don't you map it? So I just handed it back to him, and he's still on it, getting himself.
Excellent.
So that was typical.
Yeah, put his foot in it. Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. That's fascinating. So for anybody listening to this whose ears have kind of pricked up and gone, actually, that sounds really interesting, I'd love to be involved in that, when is the time which they can sort of apply to be a part of this, and kind of where do they go to do that?
Well, we've started opening up the conversations now. So we've got the sections, the 47 sections. We're hoping that we'll have all the sort of dates and itinerary by June this year, so that you'll know where we're walking past. But we're looking for, at the moment, predominantly people that are in groups or in organisations. So we're looking for people that take lead locations in each nation, which would be, you know, somebody like Julian, who runs the Southwest Coast Path, you know, might say, well, we'll take on the 630 miles for Beach of Dreams of the Southwest Coast Path, or we might do Cornwall. And so, that, you know, with his organisation and the path already mapped, he might be quite a big player. And he would then bring in lots of other smaller groups. And as a lead location, he would sort those out. Then yesterday, for example, I had a conversation with three organisations in Dover, and they're going to take on 50 miles from Thanet to Folkestone. And, you know, they can see how they can do that manageably. So I'm really up for hearing from anybody that's interested at the moment. And then I can plug them into where their section is, and if I'm already having conversations with people or not. So it's early days. We did, in January, we had nationwide Zooms with people that we, and organisations that we thought would be interested. In June, I'm going to be doing regional Zooms, which will be more section to section. So yesterday we had a meeting with an organisation in Northumberland, they reckon they can take on a whole section, and they're now going to sort of busily contact all the groups that they think might be interested, and then we'll have a meeting with all those groups. And my idea is that it will cascade. You know, once you've got somebody like Julian saying, I'm really behind Beach of Dreams, we're already getting people now in Dorset going, no, we want to do it. And then Isle of Wight going, no, we want to do it. I'm like, well, you can all do it. It's just like, and let's join it up. So I think we're pretty much from Dover all the way to Cornwall, we've pretty much got interest all the way along that coast. And then the idea is there'll be a gap and we'll go, you know, why isn't anybody doing it, you know, in Portsmouth? You know, what's wrong with you people in Portsmouth? Come on, you know. So it's like, I'm hoping that people will go, you know, we need to help this happen and fill in the gaps. And then, you know, with wonderful LDWA or ultra runners or crazy kayakers, the bits that are difficult to walk, we'll say to some kayaker, can you get around the northwest of Scotland for us, please? Take a few flags. So, yeah. Does that make sense?
That's remarkable. I mean, there's walking groups. Yeah, for sure. It does make sense. It's very much locally led instead of you trying to, from a central point of view, find everybody to fill that, which is logical, I guess, with the scale of it. Are you daunted by the scale of what you're trying to achieve here? Because it's a massive undertaking. No doubt at all from talking to you for the last 43 minutes that you're going to pull it off for sure. But I'm just curious as to what your feelings around it.
Yes, sometimes I'm daunted. I feel that, you know, I've had this, I'm used to having really big ideas and having no idea how they're going to happen. And I'm a believer in that. And I've sort of, when I have a very different approach to creative lives, and I think that's a very good complementary one, because they're sort of, they want to kind of put the structure in place, which it does need. And I'm part of a project like this, which will definitely be the most ambitious I've done to date, is the point is you don't know how to make it work. And what we're trying to do is create a system which is locally owned, but is going to make some fundamental change on the ground and potentially as a tipping point moment. And if we are able to find a way and to collectively find a way in a process to make this happen, the learning from that and the connections that we make through the process of doing it before we've even walked any steps means that there's a phenomenal structure or system or different way of organizing ourselves, which is powerful and which is community-led, you know, action. And I'm really interested in what might spin off from that. And so the devising of how to do it and learning on the way is the exciting bit, really. And when you hit a problem, you just
community-led. Sorry, no, carry on.
And actually, I'm going to link it right back to walking now, because I know that I've got a hiking audience here. So I joined the LDWA, and obviously we all know this is a long distance walking association. I actually joined it completely by mistake, because they were doing an evening walk in East London. And then, you know, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is sort of like the Ramblers, isn't it? And then we sped around East London very fast. And then they said, oh, and this is where we're going to start the 100 in 2012. I said, what's the 100? They said, oh, that's where we walk 100 miles in 48 hours. It's like, did I just hear that right? And so then not very long after.
Is that possible?
Yeah. And they're like, where have you? Well, you're not a walker. You're in your leather jacket and your DMs. I said, I've just come from work. No, you're not going to stay. You're not a walker. And then I said, well, what's this 100? And then I was like, okay. You know, 2 years later, I walked 100 miles, you know, through two nights and no sleep and whatever, which any crazy people do. But what I learned from that 100 miles was, because all the veterans would say, don't think about 100 miles, walk from checkpoint to checkpoint and just think about getting to the next checkpoint. And what I did was I decided to walk out my life. So from checkpoint 5 to checkpoint 13, I tried to remember what I was doing between when I was 5 and when I was 13. And then when I got from 50, because it was my 50th birthday, what's it going to be like from 50 to 100? And the hardest miles were around 75 miles, 75, 80. And when I did it, I got this the next morning, I got this massive high, like actually the best high in my whole life, that I'd done it. And I felt physically fantastic, but I felt, my confidence was like, well, if I can walk 100 miles in 48 hours, then I can do anything. I just need to do checkpoint to checkpoint. And I've taken that learning, you know, from that walk into every project I do. It's like, well, of course, if you're walking this ridiculous amount and Beach of Dreams is 10,000 miles, you know, it's like each thing is a checkpoint. So we've got the map. Now we need to get the people to sign up to do the walk and then wanting to do the next thing. So it's very much like not being frightened of the bigger picture. It's like, what do I need to do next to get closer to, you know, the goal, which is a very walking kind of, people who do long distance walking will understand, you know, that approach.
Fantastic. Well, that is a really wonderful bit of life advice that I've certainly enjoyed hearing, and I could actually certainly needed to hear today as well with some stuff I've got on the horizon. So thank you very much for that. So that wraps up the podcast, I think. I hope that I have helped to share the project and the ambitions for the project. It's been really lovely to have you on today. Where is the best place now just to go find out a bit more about Connecticut and Beach of Dreams online? For those who want to kind of jump off this podcast and pull up their phone and start looking at things.
It's www.beachofdreams.co.uk. And if you want to contact me, it's ali@Kinetica, kinetika.co.uk. And just say, I just heard your podcast and I want to be part of Beach of Dreams, and I'll get back to you.
All right, fantastic. That's a really, thank you for leaving your email. I am sure that you will get some people contacting you interested on the back of this. So it's been lovely to speak to you today. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.